Have you thought about leveraging Pinterest for your marketing, but you're just not sure where to start or even if it's right for you? Well, we're going to dive into organic and paid Pinterest marketing in this episode with my guest expert, Megan Williamson.
This is for you, the online business owner who wants to maximize your profit and multiply your impact. I'm Shanna, host of the Community Creators Podcast. I've spent over a decade helping top brands and entrepreneurs create thriving communities that increase their reach, retention, and revenue. This podcast is where I share my best insights and invite you into conversations with the world's leading community creators and cultivators. So grab your favorite mug, fill it up, and let's get started.
Y'all, I'm so excited to dive into this episode today because Megan Williamson is a Pinterest expert that came highly recommended to me. She has worked with large businesses and brands that you would know, household brands, and she has worked with small brands and content creators like many of you to help them grow on Pinterest, both with organic and paid methods. Now, I had Megan come and visit us inside of my Retain Group consulting program as a guest expert, where she really went into detail about how they can leverage Pinterest to get more leads and eventually more members into their membership. So I wanted to have her come and talk to our larger community here about Pinterest, because I know so many of you all are frustrated with Meta, with Instagram and Facebook, and especially in the ad market there, and you're trying to figure out alternatives. I've had lots of people tell me, I'm going to start in Pinterest. And Megan is going to share with you some red flags that may get you to second guess whether Pinterest is right for you, or at least hesitate and come up with a more strategic approach before you just throw some money at some Pinterest ads. So we're going to hear a little bit about Megan's background, how she became a renowned Pinterest expert, and even one of the few people that Pinterest Corporate actually uses to do workshops and trainings, how she got there, but also what is working now for Pinterest. What do you need to be thinking about when it comes to images versus videos, organic content versus paid? This is going to be an absolute deep dive on Pinterest. I can't wait to dive in. Well, Megan, thank you so much for being here and chatting Pinterest with us. I'm really excited to dive into your expertise because I think Pinterest is something that most people don't take advantage of. And we've talked about that already because we had you as a guest inside of our Retain Group coaching program. And you kept talking about like how everybody sleeps on Pinterest. But our goal with this episode is to really help you all decide, is Pinterest for me? And if so, how can I leverage it, especially to bring more leads into the business? But before we dive into all of that nerdy Pinterest stuff, we want to get to know you a little bit. So what's your favorite community you have ever been a part of, and what did you love about it?
So many things come to mind, but one of the very first communities that I was ever part of, a little bit nerdy as a child. This wasn't very common when I was a kid, but I was actually homeschooled. And my mother used to take us to a community of other homeschoolers, but they were all highly gifted. Like, I'm talking savants. Like people who were in world-renowned ballet troupes. It was like Steve Jobs style computer nerds. And then me and my siblings. And that was one of the first communities that was sort of like a curated community of other families that were homeschoolers that wanted to come together and experience things together. And I would say that it really left an impression on me. And I'm someone who I love to meet and learn from other people. So even as an 8-year-old, I was just like, I loved going to those events and being part of that community. And also maybe as somebody who, it was during a time period where not many people were homeschooled. And so we were treated like real freaks in our, not in a rude way, but people were just like, you're what? As a child that was born in the 80s and homeschooled, and we got really used to being treated like that. So to be able to go somewhere and have a place where other people were like us and thought outside the box, and it was like getting together a bunch of nerds, and it was an amazing community to be part of.
Yeah, I find that the homeschool communities are like that. So we homeschool as well.
Oh, do you? Okay.
And yeah, so we completely get that. We started homeschooling before the pandemic, which is, wait, what? Everybody started after the pandemic. But it is about finding that place where you can connect with other people. And back then, if you homeschooled, you tended to have a similar vision, similar values as the other people who homeschooled. So you had that aspect of it as well. But that's, it's really fascinating because I always think about that with us because there's so many homeschool communities where we are outside of Nashville. But I know it hasn't always been that way.
No. Well, and there's something really beautiful about it because now when I meet people who are choose to homeschool, there's so many resources. It's not like a diamond in a rough. I would say too that people have, it's homeschooling by choice, by intention. And I think sometimes people have this idea that you homeschool because you got kicked out of school or you had problems, which is also a huge misconception. When you choose to homeschool because that is your values or for different reasons. And so for me as a child, meeting other people who literally were on stages with famous people and these brilliant, interesting, but all kind of had that common thing that we were homeschooled for a reason and we came together. So it's sort of a very impressionable thing. Homeschooling is, it's actually an amazing as an adult to now look like when I thought about when I was younger and seeing how many people, like it's so much more common and accepted. I remember people saying things that were nasty to us or my mom or why aren't you in school? Or I'm going to call, like one person said she was going to call the police on my mom. We were at like an art gallery in the day. And it was just like, that was the mentality that we must be doing something wrong. We must be evading the police.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Yeah, it is definitely a different world today when it comes to homeschooling. So I'm curious, did being a part of a community like that have any impact on you becoming an entrepreneur?
I don't know what comes first, right? It's sort of like I never had visions of becoming an entrepreneur. I think that I always knew I was different. I was built different. I was a worker bee. I would start at the bottom at every workplace and work my way up to the top. My sister was the same. So I would go work somewhere. She would come in. We'd both be. Now I look back and it's sort of laughable that I didn't realize. I don't know. In my particular story, maybe that was actually my giftedness. As an 8-year-old, being in a homeschooling community where we homeschooled by choice, we were surrounded by beautiful, gifted individuals who all came to the same conclusion that my parents did or my mom did in particular. She was really the driving force behind it. And so in some ways, like maybe those experiences of seeing people who were thought outside the box, that didn't accept social norms, that knew you could take a risk and not do what everyone else was doing for this like amazing outcome. So maybe like in some way, it was always there. I didn't become an entrepreneur until I was in my 30s. I'm a fully trained and was a practicing school psychologist for over 10 years. And no surprise, I worked my butt off at that job too. It was amazing. A top producing team member. I remember my boss saying that to me. He's like, do you know you're in the top 4 for like highest producing, highest quality of work in our department? And I was like, no, I didn't know that. But, you know, not that that's the goal, but it was just like wherever I go and whatever I put my attention to, I put my all into. So probably those were those early threads of entrepreneur spirit.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. So how did you end up in the world of becoming a Pinterest expert?
So I, on a previous life, I've lived many lives. And in a previous life, I was working as a school psychologist here in Toronto, Canada. And I met somebody. I was in a long-term relationship with someone who was from Northern Ireland. My mom is actually Irish, so I have my Irish passport. And for years, we did Montreal. He did New York. I did Toronto. We did and we got to that age where we were like, I think I'm done grad school. He's done working. He was moving investment banks. And so we decided to make the leap to move to Europe. And so I went over with my bags packed, all my savings, was really excited, nervous. And I could not get a job for the life of me. Nobody would hire me. And it was just because I'd been educated in a different way. I actually got licensed to practice. I'm still a licensed educational psychologist in the United Kingdom. I kept my license just in case, just for fun. And I just, nobody would hire me. Work was scarce and they definitely weren't going to hire someone who hadn't been trained in their own country. So at that time, I had always been a consumer of blogs. I loved reading blogs, especially in grad school, like when I was trying to veg out. I would read gossip blogs and home decorating blogs. When I moved to the UK, I actually stumbled into this idea of blogging in a website. It was 2010, 2009-ish timeframe. And it became a creative outlet for me because I had so much time on my hands and I actually monetized it. So I didn't realize it, but I figured out how to monetize a blog very quickly. I worked as a virtual assistant, although that phrase was not even used. I was hired by a well-established interior designer in the US. And she paid me to do her social media, her website upkeep. And I taught myself basically how to make money online because I wasn't making any money in the United Kingdom. And I went viral on Pinterest within a year of being on the platform. And because I had monetized my website, I made money and I ended up coming back to Canada. And as a side hustle, I started, because I grew very rapidly on Pinterest, I went from 10,000 followers to over 100,000 in a very short period of time. I was doing influencer work with brands, and oftentimes in those like closed relationships with them, they'd say, we noticed you have a very large presence on Pinterest. And like, we as a business or a brand, we'd like to learn how to do that. And I come from a background of psychology. Like, you do not teach things or say you're an expert unless you have the book behind you. And that was drilled into me in my master's education, that you never say you're an expert unless you actually can say, back it up. So what I did was I went out, I started helping my friends that were content creators and influencers. I started helping some of the businesses I was working with as an influencer with their Pinterest marketing strategy as a method of trying to figure out, I know what worked for my account, but how do I reproduce results for others? Because I figured out very quickly, like, if you're a blogger or an influencer, Pinterest is sort of like easy, quote unquote easy. But as a brand, if your product's not sexy or it's just something that's not necessarily content first, how do I bring that to Pinterest? So I got my feet wet, learned very quickly what worked and what didn't work, created a signature sort of framework or approach to Pinterest. And I started doing consulting for big brands. It was like bizarre. That was the leap I made, right? I went from no clients, no background in marketing, to taking on like big brands as their Pinterest expert. I took on a consulting role. And from there, I started, what happens? Clients say, we love your strategy, but we don't know who's going to do it. So I started managing Pinterest accounts for fun when I was pregnant with my first son in 2016. And by 2017, my son had arrived. I loved him to death, but he was not an easy baby. And I think, do not let this be a reflection, but I was very bored. I don't know what I just like, we have a year mat leave in Canada. And I just thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do all day when he's sleeping? And what am I? And my husband said, why don't you start doing more Pinterest consulting? Within 4 weeks, we had a little website. I did a brand shoot. And 3 weeks later, I booked a $50,000 client deal for a 3 to 6 month contract, helping them, one of the biggest wedding companies and globally in the world. And that was like one of my first real clients, and the rest is history. So you can imagine, my husband left his job to take care of our son. I worked, we had flexibility of being home. And that's how I started.
So I love that you started by just doing it yourself, getting good at it. And then people kept asking you, hey, how did you do this? And then eventually you were like, okay, let me prove that this system works. Let me build a system around it so I can duplicate it. And then ultimately built this business. And so I'm curious, looking at who this does work for, I always want to make sure that people are leveraging their time well. So I know lots of membership owners and course owners are listening to this and they're going, yeah, but I don't do fashion blogging and I don't do food and I don't do this. They have their special unicorn of a niche or a product or service. And so who have you found that this works for? Or maybe it's easier to say who it doesn't work for.
Yeah.
So that right out of the gate, people know I need to pay attention to this or this isn't for me.
Absolutely. So I think that this is the first question that everyone sort of, it's not the default social media platform. And I'm glad people scrutinize, should I be on the platform? I would say it's not so much a niche or industry that shouldn't be on the platform. I have seen very unusual businesses absolutely thrive on Pinterest. What it becomes is actually more content-based. So businesses that tend to struggle on the platform or don't really get the full benefit in terms of sales, bringing people into their ecosystem and having a return, no matter how you measure that, whether it's direct sales, assisted sales in your funnel, or gaining email subscribers that you then bring into your world and you sell to. I think when we're talking about memberships and programs and courses, that's really who, what they're looking to do. I would say that it often is actually business owners and companies that do not have a content marketing strategy. So tends to be the businesses that absolutely thrive, that are making money hand over fist and laughing all the way to the bank on Pinterest, is content first brands. And so these are people who are heavily invested in their customer, in their audience, in reaching them through valuable content that they know will lead them into their world. So the people that struggle are those that are never pushing out any content to their website. They're not publishing a podcast. They're not creating content to meet their customers where they're at. For instance, we'll have a business owner, maybe a coach who has a course and then a program and a few lower ticket things. And they haven't blogged since 2018. They don't publish hardly any video on social media. Like most social media platforms, we need good content. We need original content. And video is really, I hate to say it, but it's a must in 2024 and moving forward. The amount of video that people watch is incredible, and Pinterest is no different. So I think that when you are rooted in high value content, that's really about helping people and helping them find your solution. That is when Pinterest will be that perfect fit. Now, it doesn't have to be necessarily original content. It can be repurposed content, but the best, my case studies involving people who are just, it's like shocking how well they do on Pinterest. They are often heavily invested in their content vehicles, I call them.
So if you're not looking to be a content producer, which I know people who are like, I just run my ads to my funnel and it works. And that's just what I want to do. I don't want to create YouTube videos or record a podcast or write a blog post or any number of those things. Then Pinterest really isn't for them because it is very content focused. Yeah. So for those that are producing that kind of content, so let's say we have people who are doing lives on social media. They're doing reels on Instagram or TikToks. Mm-hmm. They maybe have a podcast, maybe a YouTube channel. Maybe they do like I do and they record a podcast, turn that into a YouTube video, turn that into a blog, turn that into social content.
But I love that's just smart. That's so smart.
So let's say I have something like that and I'm looking at Pinterest because Meta ads are driving me nuts. And I'm like, how do I take advantage of Pinterest? I am producing some type of content. What's my best way to leverage Pinterest to get more leads into my funnel?
Best case scenario is while you are in the content creation or ideation stage of your content plan, you are considering what that looks like to Pinterest. Repurposing, by all means, it works very well. Just taking what you've created for your podcast or for YouTube and repurposing, or your live, like you mentioned, if they go live or they're really leaning heavy into Instagram reels, you can repurpose all of that, share it to Pinterest, and then drive traffic to your website, to your email opt-in, to your low ticket products, and bring people into your funnel. I think best case scenario, though, is when people really start to taste the return that Pinterest can have for them, is they actually consider, well, what does our audience on Pinterest, what are they looking for? And then it becomes part of your workflow that you record the podcast episode. You know that there's going to be one or two parts of it that are really going to resonate with your Pinterest audience for different reasons. I do find that when we look at the type of people who are on Pinterest, they are heading there with the intent to find solutions. And so, but they do tend to be more beginner or more basic. So they're top of funnel. So when you think about your content creation, you're going to want to think about that when you're thinking about that reel or thinking about that audience that you're creating with your podcast. So I actually suggested, like in our training that I did for your group, is like, to me, Pinterest is really great at top of funnel and bringing people in. I don't think always wonderful, depending on the price point for converting your audience. It's not really like with top of funnel, you have to bring people down. So what I encourage people to do is actually bring folks to the place where you convert. I find that podcasts, use that particular example, are really amazing at creating community and nurture your audience, build those relationships with people. So I would actually drive traffic to the places that will help you convert your audience, get to know them, build those relationships. I don't think it has to be, you don't have to be necessarily including Pinterest in those early stages. But when you can think about, okay, they're more top of funnel, what are the questions they're asking themselves? And I know it's hard to do because we're all experts at what we're doing. We're so advanced. But when we can really put ourselves into their shoes and think about what are the, and that voice of customer at stage one, two, early stages, those first few steps of their journey into your world, that is the content that will resonate with pinners.
So it's really not about promoting your launches, essentially. It's about helping build that top of funnel, get people on your list, maybe get people into your free group, get people listening to your podcast or whatever it might be, so that you're adding these people to your funnel in a way that it's, I'm sure there's overlap between Instagram and Pinterest, but the way people look for content on Pinterest is very different. And it, like you've said, it's really an untapped market. So there is lots of opportunity there. One of the things I love about Pinterest, which is similar to YouTube, is that there is that search engine optimization aspect of it, to where you really can be a little bit more scientific in the words that you're using and how you build out your boards, how you name and describe your pins. And then there's also the evergreen aspect of it, where there's such a short lifespan of the majority of content that we post on Instagram and Facebook and these other social platforms, but Pinterest content can live on for years. I know we've been in the middle of a home renovation and I'll click on things and it's like a 2017 article. And sometimes it can be a little annoying because I'm like, that's not what I'm looking for. Yeah. I need something for 2024. But it's great for that content creator, right? Because they created something once. And 5-6 years later, it's still getting traffic to it. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit just about that SEO aspect and how that means we need to be thinking about Pinterest differently than we would Facebook or Instagram?
Well, and I love that you touched upon that, because you mentioned a few things that are just beautiful. And I want to bring back to answer the question is that with things like keywords and SEO, so search engine optimization, Pinterest is a visual search engine. I think the reason why I've always been drawn to growing my own businesses and my clients and the most successful businesses that I have worked with on their teams, they are heavily invested in search engine traffic. And I think one of the reasons why is because the user intent is there. You're not going out and all just screaming at people, buy my thing. It's that are like, oh, you're already looking for it. Let us help you. Two, you can control it. You set it. And I think that probably there's a part of me that I'm very easygoing, but I also feel like I don't want to be at the whim of an algorithm on a platform. So with search engines, yes, of course, there is still on Pinterest an element of you don't always know when you're going to go viral, but I can ensure that my content, my clients, and my students' content is ranking for that particular topic. I was just doing a demo for somebody the other day. We were looking at a very niche topic, and one of my other students was the top ranking pin. And I was like, look at that. I'm so proud. She put in the effort. She did the research. So when we talk about optimizing for keywords on Pinterest, what we're really looking at are what are those keywords and keyword phrases that pinners are using to find that solution, inspiration, content, that pin. And so you really have to map, what does your content, who do you want your content to appeal to? How are they searching? And I'm just going to put it out there, because I know you have a lot of people who are very established, been doing this for a long time, is that your Pinterest keywords are different than your Google SEO or the SEO you'd be using on your website, and different than YouTube. Yes, there is this incredible, I actually call it like the trifecta, right? The three of them work amazing together. There's knockoff effects between them. There's social signals we know is even more true now. And they work together beautifully. But if you think about how you go to Google, you might put in something like the best beige for a baby's nursery. That's how you're looking at. You want to know what beiges people are using. You might find some interior designer sites or blogger sites. On Pinterest, you would do beige baby nursery. So we don't search with questions. We're searching with just keywords. And the words that people use on Pinterest can be a little bit different. And again, YouTube, again, a little bit different. So it's just about that the users are different. There's lots of crossover. So I just recommend that people, you know, if you're heavy leaning into YouTube or Google, just take that extra 1 minute and do your research for your Pinterest keywords on Pinterest. There are lots of free resources right there on Pinterest. You do not have to pay money. You don't have to do anything. You just have to take the little bit of extra time to optimize what that looks like and decide what you want to rank for. So sometimes you have to get really good at your copy for Pinterest. Who's it for? Are you clear and concise? Have that hook. And using those keywords so that Pinterest knows what your content is about. And that's basically how you sort of set yourself up for success with that Pinterest technology.
If you want to create a thriving online community, you need to join my free Community Creators Hub. Inside of this free hub, you're going to get access to a searchable database of every episode of this podcast, as well as my favorite free resources, like my 77 plus connection ideas list, community manager best practices guide, and scripts for video messaging, plus so much more. Discover the tools and the resources that I rely on to grow and manage thriving online communities. Just go to communitycreatorshub.com to get your free access.
And those keywords, they apply to the title, the description, the board that you pin it to. Are all three of those things come into play?
Yes. So to different degrees, from what we can understand, I spend a lot of time in the trenches of the Pinterest engineering blog, which is just like reading a foreign language. Thankfully, it used to be in academia, but it's still very confusing. So we know that there are, they all factor in for sort of the, your rank, right? Your rank outcome. But we know that the text overlay on your pin graphic and your pin title seem to be the two most important places. After that is your pin description, the board you pin it to that you name in a keyword rich way, and actually the link you use. So they will penalize you if you are saying that it's a blog post about how to eliminate sugar from your diet or how to eat healthier, but you're linking to a fitness program. They will actually penalize you because they send a ping out. They ping the website. Is this relevant to what's being advertised? And if there's no connection, they pick up on that. So there are multiple touch points for sort of coming up with, I wouldn't call it an SEO score, but SEO health on the platform. And so they use those multiple touch points to decide who it's relevant to and who they should show it to. Yeah. And that's how it becomes a science.
And that doesn't mean that you can't link to a landing page or something like that. It's just that it needs to be relevant to whatever the pin is, right?
I think
because you've said you can link to a landing page, but it needs to be a longer landing page because these people don't know you. So you have to earn their trust on that landing page.
Yeah.
And then you can try to sell low ticket items. I've seen a lot of people selling like Etsy color palette kind of thing. So if you do have some of those retail items, you can sell that. But just from what we've seen work well in the industry, it's more about delivering great content, getting the lead from within that content after you provided value. And then when you get the lead on the thank you page, you're offering them the low ticket offer, which is a similar funnel to what we recommend in other social media platforms. And so it's not that you can't leverage the funnel that you already have. You don't have to build a new funnel for Pinterest. It's just you might want to tweak how you're presenting the content on the platform.
Yeah. And I think what sometimes too is that people come and they'll just say, well, I'm just cutthroat. I'm all about the numbers. And I get that. And they just want to link to their products. And that's fine. But what you have to remember is then that pinners are going there with an open mind and they typically aren't in the buyer's mode yet. So because of that, they really think you're going to, like the way I used to describe it, especially early on in my agency time, is that people are going there expecting lifestyle content. So they're not really expecting, and I think most social media has gone that way. Yes, we like to see the product, but we want it to be a little bit more. There's a reason why product placements became a thing in movies. It's like we want to experience something. We want to kind of, when we see things now, we think, so what? Like we need to be moved in some way. You can link directly to your products. And there's nothing wrong with that, with doing that on Pinterest. But what I would say is that we tend to find that people aren't impulsive from Pinterest. So if they stumble upon your thing, yes, if it's $100, they will buy right away. And we see lots of people selling digital assets or selling mini workshops or toolkits and this type of thing, especially if that's your space. If you sell information-based products that are digital, we see lots of sales of those from Pinterest organically. But what we notice is that once they start creeping up, even $75, $100, thousands of dollars, those people need to come in because they just also don't know who you are. They've never heard of you before. So you'll get much better return when you're patient long-term and bring them, like you said, through valuable content, you bring them into your ecosystem, and then you are able to allow them to prepare the prospect for that bigger solution that you offer. We do see lots of sales with cheaper items. I say cheaper, lower price point items. But I do think really driving people to just come into your world through free content and then through a lead magnet or a freebie is a wonderful way to build your list and then build your list between launches. So that's what I do personally. And I think that for most people who are working online, bringing to them to the place where you nurture, prepare, and then launch is just smart. We're always looking to build our email list between launches if you offer closed products or things that you launch. And Pinterest is perfect for that.
Yeah, we talk all the time about conversion rates on launches and people talking about how their launches didn't convert as well. And oftentimes it always comes down to not building your list between launches. So this is really a great strategy to be thinking about long term. So as people go in and are sharing content, can you talk a little bit about image versus video on Pinterest? Because I know you said video is still really strong on Pinterest. I feel like I experience Pinterest a little bit differently because I am more image driven. So that's what I lean towards. But
yeah,
if I had to choose, or if there's some advice you would give around the balance of image and video, what would that be?
Well, always balance too. I do like asking people how they use Pinterest themselves. And I would actually say I'm quite like you as well. I do engage with a mixture of things. If there's something I want to pre-vet, a very good example is I want to cook, or I wanted to cook something with chicken and maybe mango. And I like to, and this is why I like Pinterest, I like to see what the end product looks like. And then I love watching a short video to be like, oh no, they're like world-class level chef. Like, I'm not recreating that. My kids won't eat it, or they have very special ingredients that I don't have. I do think that personally, I'm drawn to the aesthetic of a photo or a video. So the video lets me pre-vet, is this worth going to the website? Am I going to make it? I also think that sometimes stepping outside and remember, yes, we can give ourselves a lot of insight about our customer, but also remembering that sometimes the numbers just drive it. So people, there is a younger generation on Pinterest. They are just like everywhere else, watching a ton of video. And a lot of business owners, and it's probably why during our private session, I talked a lot about it, because what I notice is a lot of resistance to video in general. I was there too, right? 2 years ago, I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I'm really not good at short form video. I'm long-winded. I can never tell any short stories. Like, it's just, if you haven't got that, I'm just like an in-depth person who likes to give a lot of context and information. But you have to figure out a way to do that. And I think that Pinterest is no different. We do know that the way that content is distributed, whether it's video format or image format, is different. In the past, there has been a preferential treatment in the distribution of your content if it was video-based. Now, things have been, the back-end technology has changed, and the way content is being pushed out is, it's a kind of all being pushed out the same. I'm not going to get into the mechanics of what that is, but just know that it's pretty much the same, but I still see that video is the best way to build your audience, build visibility, and then images convert your audience. And that's really what I teach in my own programs, is that we're looking at both. We're leveraging video to grow our visibility, to have people discover us, and then we're bringing them closer, giving them the information they want with images. And obviously, it depends on your industry. Some industries are harder than others to create video for, but doing both will allow you to have your hands in both pots.
So thinking about video more as like gaining followers, and your images more about getting people to convert to your list by providing very specific pieces of content. Okay, that's super helpful. Are there any sort of best practices around video or images that we need to be aware of? Because I know there's so many different sizes and lengths.
Sure.
And
well, what I find is often a lovely but misinformed social media manager will be in charge, and they will, in an attempt to save time, just take what's been created for other platforms and put it up without adjustment. So the best thing you can do if you're working with video and you're repurposing, so TikTok, YouTube Shorts, TikTok videos, or Instagram Reels can all be repurposed. What you want to do is take that video, strip it of the watermark. Pinterest does not want sloppy seconds. They do want you. They say, we know you're repurposing, we don't mind, but ideally, please at least get rid of the watermark. And then you just want to adjust. So when you bring it to the platform, just do some quick research. So if you're teaching people about membership retention strategies, you did your writing for Instagram or for Facebook, just jump into Pinterest, look up that particular topic. Yours is very niche, so probably not a great example. But if you are doing puppy training, you have a puppy membership or you do dog training. I joined one once, is that you do your research for Instagram, but then when you bring it to Pinterest, what I want you to do is look up those phrases. What are you people saying? People are seeking puppy training for tiny dogs, puppy training, 6 months old, and think about the words that are being searched for in Pinterest. And that's the copy you're going to use on the cover of your video and your pin title. Reinforce it with your pin description and then link to whatever you're hoping to link to. And same again, like with TikTok or YouTube Shorts. So just, we know 9-to-16 ratio does best. Anywhere from 9 seconds to 1 minute, we find is very good, but even shorter, right? People often don't have their sound on because it's a lot of moms. Kids are in the household. They're not expecting sound. So if you are doing any audio that is teaching, just make sure you have captions. And then if it's images, same again, different optimization. So ideally, it's an aspect ratio of 2-to-3. So just whether you work with a graphic designer like I do, or you use Canva yourself and you have templates, just make sure if you have an Instagram post or a graphic that was made for the website, just adjust it to 2-to-3, which is 1,000 pixels by 1,500 pixels. And 1-to-1 can work okay. It's fine. I always say experiment, but I find just make those little adjustments, add in your keywords, and you'll thank me later.
So this is all amazing. And we're all talking organic. So this is the organic strategy of Pinterest. But I know a lot of people have been curious about the ad side.
Yeah.
I've talked to a few people who have said, we're just going to start throwing some money at some Pinterest ads, but like they don't do anything organic for Pinterest. Mm. So do you recommend that people really do organic first? Mm. And then how does somebody know when they're ready to do ads? And then what does that look like?
Yeah, great questions. Okay. So first off, what I always say, I see lots of companies running ads on Pinterest without having done any organic activity. What I would say is if you have a very big budget and an appetite for risk, go ahead. I don't mind. What I find though is most business owners, especially when you're trying something new, you have patience. It can take time. But generally speaking, when it comes to search related platforms, we as business owners have been conditioned by the impulsivity of Meta ad folks, and they're impulsive. They buy quickly. And the what works on Meta does not work on Pinterest. I, in fact, even have a friend who's an ads expert, and we chatted several times and she was like, I know I can do it. Like, I'm an ads expert. She pulled all of her efforts because she did ask me for a little bit of support, but she basically was DIYing it and she just couldn't figure it out. And it was because she just didn't have, she just applied the same ads funnel from her Meta ads and her clients that she has. But what I would say is if you're serious, organic first just makes sense because you can pre-test for free what is going to resonate. So instead of making those mistakes with money behind it, figure out, and probably a lot of really good Meta experts will say the same thing. Don't bring a brand new funnel. If you want to spend a few $1,000s and we can see if it works, fine. If you have an appetite for risk, I don't mind risk, but I also am like, if I lose, you have to be okay with it. It's like going to a casino, right? We have $5,000. If we lose it, if we walk out with 10, we're happy. If we come out even and we had a good laugh, we learned something, fine. But a lot of people, I think, just aren't patient enough. So Pinterest ads take 3 weeks to optimize. And so you can burn through a lot of money before you even make your first sale. So what I would say is it depends on the price of the item. I feel more comfortable when there's a proven funnel and that we have safety nets. So for me and my clients and my students, what I teach, I'm giving away a little bit here, but test it organically, have that proven funnel and have safety nets. It's a little bit harder now with all the privacy changes, but basically we run remarketing ads on Pinterest as well as on Facebook. And we try to make sure, well, if they leak, like if they don't make the purchase, can we catch them somewhere else? And then it's an assisted purchase. So what I would say is low ticket is better. Over a certain price is going to be a hard sell. People love cheap and cheerful to start because they're cold on Pinterest. Have patience. Make the reason, the benefit of also running organic is you can season your Pinterest pixel, not pixel. It's called Pinterest tag, but I say pixel because that's what we know from Meta. You can season your Pinterest tag with traffic and sales and add to cart before you run ads. So then your pixel or your tag has customer information and will go out and seek those people before they're, you're paying for them. So I think that the problem is that most people are just very uncomfortable with losing the money, and it takes 3 weeks to optimize. But some people have lots of success and other people get nervous. And it's the same thing. Like, you can't touch your ads for the first like 1 to 2 weeks. And so people will be like, I actually had a client who's a big business coach in the US, and their team brought me in and we were running their ads. They were doing beautifully. And they went in and they wanted to change something and they didn't check with me. And the campaign just died right after. And it's like, you hear about that happening with Meta too, but that is like one of the risks you take, right? It's just very fickle. And I find that people are, they just don't have the appetite for it because it's just, it's a different beast.
Have you found that if something performs well organically and getting leads? So let's say I have this like viral Pinterest something that has just brought me in a ton of leads. Is that an opportunity for me to go, hey, let me test
100%
this thing as an app?
Yes, it's perfect. And what I do is, so when I'm doing a consult, we'll assess what's done really well organically, if it aligns with the funnel and then the conversion goals. If it doesn't, do we need to rejig things a little bit? And then what we'll do is we'll take that asset that's basically done very well. I'm somebody who I like to test multiple assets. So if we only had the one, say, static image that went viral and has organically brought leads in for 2 years, like at a slow drip, basically what we can do is create an ad campaign, create some variations of that image, test out different ad creative, add in a few video and test that as well. And then pour the gasoline on it by making it a paid ad. I do think that paid advertising has a huge opportunity when it comes to Pinterest, again, because I feel like all the verticals are growing, especially in our space. It's just it's difficult to fix your funnel. Like, you can't be fixing a funnel in real time on there. And it just has to be really airtight because it is top of funnel. So they're aware of solutions, but they're not like specific to your product yet. They're not product aware. So what I think happens on Facebook is there's just more product awareness. So when people buy, or even then we talk about, like, I'll have people come to me, clients, and they'll be like, well, we make a lot of sales from Instagram. And when we run a flash sale, that's another thing, things that are time sensitive. So I have clients who come to me and they're like, we're doing this flash sale for 2 weeks. Can we run ads? Well, the ad campaign hasn't even optimized and it's over. So really only focus on evergreen, focus on building your email list, bringing people in with low ticket items, and then pitch all everything else internally once they're in the world. But you can tell probably from my voice, right? I'm like hesitant because I feel like it's a very shiny thing. And I know lots of folks who, like, they've been locked out of their Meta accounts and they're like, okay, we're going to Pinterest. And it's just hard because it's a trickier funnel to nail. Not that you can't. I think it just works. It works really well when you have a strong content funnel.
Yeah. And I think that's really the lesson in all of this is you can't just hop onto Pinterest and expect to start getting leads, right? Just like any other platform. I know people with 10 million followers on Instagram that are coming to me and asking how to make money on Instagram because they don't have the funnel on the back end. And so really this comes down to, if you have that established email marketing funnel, somebody gets an invitation to a free workshop or a webinar, et cetera, and then you can sell them on the back end of that, or they get your free lead magnet. Maybe they get a low ticket something, what resonates with them from a keyword perspective, then start to look for those things that are really taking off. And if you want to put some ad money behind it to try and pour gasoline on the fire, like you said, then by all means, give it a shot. But don't expect to just go over there, figure out the platform first. Don't expect to be able to do your launches, your short-term launches in there, your flash sales in there. This is really about a longer-term strategy, just like YouTube. So if you're familiar with YouTube, you're familiar with the fact that YouTube is a long game. It is not a short game. So we're talking about building great content. We really SEO optimize content as well. We're talking about making sure that once they click on that link and go to our content, that there is some type of invitation to connect at a deeper level outside of Pinterest. So a really great list builder, a really great offer around podcast episode or whatever it might be. If you want to have a low ticket offer on the back end of that, we have an episode that released earlier this year with Justin and Sarah talking about how to create low ticket offers from existing content. So don't feel like you have to create something new. Listen to that episode. They'll tell you how to get something out, but that can be a great way to start testing. Are they buyers or are they just freebie seekers? And then ultimately, if we get this magical funnel of the people coming in through our organic Pinterest traffic are converting, then we can start talking about how do we put some ad money behind this.
Yeah. And if you're running meta ads and remarketing, I think it can be smart. I've done that before too, right? Just built my audiences and then I know I'm running large remarketing audiences. The privacy changes have made that a little bit more difficult. But once you touch something, you're in that world, right?
Yeah. So you can still leverage it for that, right? Or it's because I know that's always a question of like, I'm running retargeting ads on Meta, can I use Pinterest to just get more traffic to my site to build that pixel up to expand my audience for Meta ads?
Absolutely. As long as you're targeting the right people. We both know that you can by accident, like if you're being very specific and in who you're looking to attract, yes. And I've done it. I've tested it. I feel that, again, it's best done when people are very familiar with UTM tracking and using more powerful analytic platforms. Well, anyways, it depends on what industry you're in, but where you can actually track the sale. People who are just looking at last touch, they'll spook. But if you are sort of using UTM parameters and you can track your customers and your customer behavior and know, okay, from pin to remarketed by Facebook ad, join list, bot program, then you can do it. I think that oftentimes we just forget that it takes time. Like you mentioned it, like I too know so many people, millions of followers or massive platforms, and they just aren't sure how to convert their audience. They have an engaged audience. They're not sure how to monetize. And so what you have to do is also think that you might be very good at a particular platform and what works there. But then you need to translate that success to another platform where the people are different. They are not expecting to necessarily be sold a solution right away. And so that is where that like patience piece of the SEO related comes in. And it will beautifully build your email list in the background. I know people have walked away from their businesses for months and months due to different things. And they're like, oh, I'm still getting email subscribers from that thing 2 years ago that you taught me. It's just, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's really the dream.
Yeah.
Megan, this has been super helpful. And I'm really grateful because I think you have at least given people clarity and not painted this picture of like, oh, it's this magical unicorn of a thing. Just throw some money in the slot machine and you're going to hit the jackpot, which is what I love about this podcast is we really get very specific as to what it actually takes to experience success in different mediums and modalities. And so I want to know, like, if people are venturing that way, if they want to learn more about Pinterest, what's the best way for them to continue to learn more from you?
It might not surprise you, Shanna, but it is to join my email list. All roads lead to my email list, although I'm active across social media. Megan A. Williamson, I'm on Threads and TikTok and Instagram, but my email list is really where I share the best gold nuggets. And yeah, you can sort of learn what's happening. I'm there every single week without fail. And as I came across in when I was talking, like all roads lead to my email list because that's one of my goals.
I love it. We'll have a link to that in the show notes and the description. Well, thanks for coming and hanging out with us today.
Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to get everyone's feedback as they start to play in Pinterest and experience success. Make sure to message me, message Megan. Let us know that you've implemented and that you're seeing wins.
Great. Thanks for having me, Shanna.
If you have an established membership, you know that retention is the name of the game. When you can keep your customers longer, you increase the lifetime value of each and every customer, which increases your profitability in your business. If you've been wanting to decrease your churn, keep your customers longer, and establish somebody in your business to help really support you on the retention journey, I want you to take a look at my Retain Group Consulting Program. This is crafted specifically to help you establish a solid retention strategy and support a leader on your team that can become the retention leader you've been looking for. Just go to joinretain.com to learn more. Hey friend, thanks for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to subscribe. Then do me a favor and leave a review letting me know what you want to hear more of. To learn more about the show or connect with me, head to shannalynn.com. That's shannalynn.com. Until next time.